taste, you miss the BS and the new normal in a place called Nightmarica. My guest is Clint Richardson. He's an author and a documentary filmmaker. There was the first part of this, probably about 10 or 15 minutes, was not recorded. So I just kind of want to summarize it and kind of preface what you're going to hear from Clint when the real actual conversation starts between he and I. We talked about Tony Fauci in 2017, January, talking about the new administrations coming in and that they would have an outbreak of some sort, that they would have a challenge. Okay, so it starts out with that. That's how Clint's new documentary, The Wagging the Dog, of the story behind the COVID-19 story. I began by talking about the Spanish flu and how there was a vaccination program that started then because the troops from World War I, an unnecessary war, came home and they needed to vaccinate people from any diseases that they were bringing. And then, of course, there was a mask issue 100 years ago. People getting together, talking about the mask, probably, do we really need to do this? All the things that are going on now went on back then. Bacterial pneumonia was the outcome of the wearing of the mask for an extended period of time, causing death. Not necessarily from the Spanish flu, which was largely injected and triggered, I want to say that way, not something that came out of nowhere and affected people. This was part of an injection program, a vaccination program, kind of like the one that they're talking about is going to happen in America at some point with the SARS-CoV-2 bullshit. So I spoke about the mask. We spoke about this. We started talking about the Spanish flu kind of as a preface to where we are now. 100 years ago, we're seeing history repeat. And Clint's going to be talking about how they exhumed Eskimos, Inuits from the grave to then extract the virus somehow and then patent it. And then, so he starts explaining that. And that's where largely you're going to, after this, you're going to hear Clint describing something. And then I'm going to jump in and say, okay, I need to cover what we've started to talk about because I knew at that time that we hadn't recorded some of that in the beginning. So fuck me. Thanks for listening. Spread it far and wide. I'm going to put Clint's documentation in the show. That's the Corporation Nation documentary. The Lethal Injection Part 1. I'm going to put the 9-hour Wagging the Dog documentary. I'm going to, and soon the Lethal Injection Part 2, A Corruption of Blood, will be out there in the ether too. So I'm going to put all the show notes and everything in there. Again, thanks for listening. Share it far and wide. And fight the evil powers that be, I guess. Whatever you can do. Every action taken is a powerful thing. So here's the show.
Content of the virus of the sac that carries the vesicle that is the viral casing, and put whatever you want in there. And because the receptors on that casing can then go and attach to anything else in the body, you can deliver any virus you want, anything that is viral, in other words, any kind of DNA or RNA into the system, because the body only sees the receptor, says, okay, I know that receptor, I'm going to allow it to transfer its cargo, which is biological information, basically. So that's what's happening with the typhoid fever. Yeah, they vaccinated all the soldiers in all the countries with these experimental vaccines, and it caused a typhoid fever, and of course it spread. So it's a fairly well documented thing, but not necessarily a publicly known entity. But I cover it again in the first documentary.
So we had like a little bit of a an issue with audio here that I corrected a little ways in. So let's summarize what we spoke about already. Fauci started January 10th of 2017. He was at a a particular meeting about, you know, disease that they love to, you know, get together about, and dual use gain of function, which we find out in the documentary. And so he says in January 10th of 2017 that there's going to be a surprise outbreak in the new administration. And that's been widely, you know, put out there on the internet, with Fauci saying there will be a surprise. There will be a surprise outbreak. I'm Joseph Mengele reincarnated. Okay. And so
we control the viruses. We will tell you when they will be released. Right. Basically,
and
what he's saying.
And so after that, I brought up my concerns about the things that I heard about the Spanish flu, and how there was a large vaccination program, because they said that the troops were coming home from World War One, and that they were going to be bringing diseases. So they started injecting people with some, you know, satanic poison, we'll just call it. You know, there's more details. And you just said typhoid. So as Clint was breaking that down, he spoke about how, and I'm not sure, it was probably sometime within the last 10 years, they dug up, they exhumed bodies of people that had died from the Spanish flu so that they could somehow recreate and or patent, which they've done, this virus. And I guess that kind of summarizes it in a...
The patent came through in 2009, and then it somehow, you know, arrived in the population again in 2009, right after the patent was granted. And of course, they're not going to dig anything up and then genetically resequence it and figure out why it was so virulent and not then patent it, because that's the whole point of doing all this type of research. So it's very important to know that type of story, if you will, is pretty much every virus, you know, every outbreak we've had, H1N1, H5N1, all these different things, Ebola, they're all man-made viruses, not the original strain, but they take the strain and again gain of function or loss of function, which just means mutation. So they're mutating the virus in a way that'll make it more virulent, more contagious, more this, more that, in order to study, or so they say, in order to study if it ever happened in the human population. So if you take bird flu, for instance, H5N1, they took already highly pathogenic bird flu, which is not transmissible from human to human, and in the laboratory they added a gain of function. In this case, they added certain receptors that allow it to be transferable from human to human. So suddenly a virus that already kills 60% of the people that it infects, and it goes from a bird to some mammal then to human, now it can be transferred in a lab from human to human, or mammal to mammal. Usually they use something like a ferret or a monkey or whatever, but usually it's a ferret, a civet, or some kind of animal like that, which is why they lied to us about the civets in the marketplace, you know, the Wuhan market. They said, oh, it's probably caused by, an intermediary animal, a mammal, that then transfers it to humans, the bat virus. But in fact, what they did with the coronavirus, and coronavirus, by the way, is a shape. It's you shouldn't think of it as anything more. It's a crown looking thing. Corona means crown, just like there's a crown on the Corona beer bottle. Right. And it looks, you know, it's got the points with the little round receptors on the end. And that's what a coronavirus. So think of children's blocks, you know, put the round block in the round hole, put the square block in the square hole. That's kind of like receptors. Your bat receptor spike, the male part that fits into the female part, is not going, you know, the triangle is not going to fit into the square. And nature makes it that way. So in the lab, they say, well, let's replace the term, or add to it, a gain of function, which is to put, in this case, HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, as they call it, spikes onto the bat coronavirus, so that we don't need it to actually infect a civet or a ferret or some animal before it goes to the human. Now it can directly infect the human, which is impossible in nature. That's how nature works, right? So they're giving it a gain of function, making it more contagious, and now all of a sudden a virus that for all intents and purposes is beneficial to bats, right? This is what you have to understand, is all these viruses are meant to be there. They're part of nature. They're part of your body. Mm-hmm. You have a virome. They make up your immune system. Without viruses, we wouldn't exist.
And right, bacteria, phages, all those things that...
Right. All those, all that whole system relies on it. And before anybody again says viruses don't exist or all that, a virus used to be simply defined as pus, virulent matter, in other words, contagious matter, pus, venom, poison, right? So you have people saying, well, it's probably poison, some kind of poison that is infecting the body. Well, poison is virus. It's the same thing. And all that means is it's something that can communicate with the body. In other words, it is something that has a receptor or spike that allows the transfer of biological information into a cell or, you know, whatever the viral thing happens to be. And so all of this nonsense that viruses don't exist is, you know, it's kind of like saying, if I say a gun doesn't exist, therefore it can't harm me. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work that way. I'm sorry. Right. It's right. So,
I mean, what I'm looking at now, I'm listening, I'm covering the landscape. You know, I have to be able to pull in all this information. I don't necessarily believe it, and I don't necessarily not believe it. I, you know, as I'm listening to it, I think, you know, I hear things like from Judy Mikovits where she talks about the XMRV that came from animals and then somehow got into the blood supply and, she said, infected vaccines, to where these viruses that are not inherent in us but are inherent in these animals will go in and hijack our immune system, just like you speak about with the prion disease, with all of these dementia diseases actually being one actual disease that has different, you know, flavors of symptoms. Whereas the prion comes in and it's an infectious prion, and it's not a, you know, a Clint natural prion at birth, or a, you know, or me or someone else. And most so that comes in, the prion comes in, and it because it's a foreign protein, it messes with it. So one thing that,
well, that's the point. That's the main point, is you have something in your body that is so similar mm-hmm. to what they're injecting into you that it causes some form of autoimmune response. Now, autoimmune means self immunity. In other words, you become your own bodily functions become a disease. So your body makes antibodies towards that foreign particle, whatever it is, that, you know, anything. And suddenly you find yourself with a disease because your own body is fighting its own functionality. Now, I used the example in the first documentary, Lethal Injection, of how they sterilize horses. And it's so simple. It's the best way to understand it, I think, mm-hmm. which is the U.S. Geological Survey, and a primary source, they explain how they do it. I'm not just making this up. Has a 90% success rate with sterilizing horses, and they call it a vaccination, by the way. And all they're doing is putting porcine zona pellucida, which means pig ovary, essentially, part of a pig's ovary, part of the sexual reproduction part of the body, and they're injecting that into the horse. That's all that's needed. Any other ingredients in the vaccine does not matter. All that matters is that they're sterilizing horses by injecting a pig ovary, basically, little particles of pig ovary into the body. And what that does is causes the horse or the human or any other animal it's injected into to produce antibodies against the sexual organs of a pig. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we all have very similar structures to those sexual organs. Your body really is trained to produce antibodies to protect your own body, and therefore when it produces antibodies that go against something that is so similar to your own body, it causes this autoimmune or self-immunity mm-hmm. disease. You, like your own prions,
which are proteins,
will get infected or reprogrammed because the prion, the scrappy prions from sheep or whatever come in and reprogram the prion. But in this case, most disease is caused by these autoimmune things. Another one I put
squalene, I think of squalene. Right, exactly. That's what I was thinking. It was one of the first things that I remember hearing, is that squalene is so similar to something in our bodies that lubricates our joints.
Yeah.
That when it gets injected, it starts to create wreak havoc in that area of the body.
Your body fights the creation of squalene in your own natural squalene. It develops a sort of immunity to your own squalene, and that describes, in my estimate, the majority of diseases that we suffer from. Anything from arthritis to, you know, heart complication, all these things, there's so many diseases that fall under the autoimmune. Lupus is a really good example. A lot of people suffer from those type of things. Muscular dystrophy, all the, they're autoimmune diseases where the body is fighting its own production of things that would otherwise make you healthy. And to me, this is the most, you know, Matsumoto, one of the doctors I was quoting, he said it's the most sinister biological weapon imaginable, because it's not killing people. It's slowly degrading people to where they really can't be in a position to fight back.
A soft kill. Alex Jones was talking about for years, the soft kill. Fluoride, things like that.
Well, you know, at this point, I used to tease some of the things he said, but at this point, I'm actually putting out the warning that when I first started looking at this, I'm like, we're going to die. We're going to be dead in less than 10 years if we allow this to continue. Because, I mean, just think about that one issue. I mean, we're lucky, if you ask me, that we got COVID-19, right? We're lucky we got such a manageable, if you will, viral infection. Mm-hmm. We didn't get bird flu. In other words, the lab didn't leak or accidentally release, you know, there wasn't a lab accident or whatever of something much worse that would kill. Bird flu already killed 60%. Mm-hmm. If it was human to human transferable, sure, it could kill 100%.
Right.
Right. If that escapes from the lab.
Right.
Now, the other even worse fear to me is that, okay, now we've done all this research, we've done all these experiments, we've added gains of function, we've made it more virulent, more contagious, we've made it more resistant to drugs, so that all of our current drugs have no effect on it, right? And now it's just sitting there waiting to be accidentally released or purposely released. I'm not here to tell you that, because I can't prove that. But I do have the evidence, obviously, from their own mouths that they've been creating this stuff.
Right.
And what they're doing, and why the whole debate started in the first place, is when they first did this H5N1 bird flu, highly contagious bird flu, and they made it human transmissible and all these other things, they then wrote a report on it, you know, because they have to publish their findings in the journals, so that anyone, basically, even it took them years of research, so that anyone could basically take that with the right equipment, even in their garage, if they had the right equipment, reproduce that genetic sequence, and release it into the public. Anybody can do that because, hey, they're stupid enough, or I don't know, maybe overly confident enough, that they can then do this experiment then and give instructions, essentially. I mean, it's like essentially putting the instructions to build a nuclear bomb onto the clouds that anybody can get.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we look at this, right? We look at what Bill Gates talked about in 2010, a decade of vaccinations, which he went into India, he went into Africa and paralyzed. He essentially went in there to protect against disease, and he gave the disease largely what they were trying to, what they were supposedly protecting them from. And he's been whitewashing all this information off the internet, but key people have all this information saved. But so he says he's going to do that. And then he's at a TED conference pointing back to behind him. He says, you know, this back here is going to hurt a lot of people. What's that? Oh, it's a coronavirus. Guys like David Martin, there's a lot of people that are familiar with David Martin. You probably are by now, where he's saying that back in 1999, they essentially created the coronavirus medical financial complex, where they would start this particular project that would, in 2003, where, you know, SARS, the sudden acute respiratory syndrome, becomes, a thing, and then it disappears. Bye-bye. Goes away, right? But nonetheless, it's in the ether. MERS comes around. You know, we had the 2008 financial crisis that was created by Bill Clinton and his cohorts to deconstruct investment in commercial banking, deregulate it, and then they created knowing that it was going to create a crisis where then they would bail out the banks. 2009, we have H1N1, which you spoke about, the swine flu, which has ties to the exhuming of the bodies of people, Inuits that died from Spanish flu. And then sometime in 2013 or so, 2014, we have MERS, the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. And then, just these continual patents that David Martin points out that were created, and the lies that they told the CDC and NIH told when they were confronted about it. And, so here we are. We largely have, I'm still connected to you. Somebody messaged.
Yeah,
me.
I was just
okay, cool. Okay, so, okay. And so, you know, here we go. Over the last 20 years, we have the lead up, we have the trail, if you will, the trail of information that's put into the ether about coronavirus. So I guess it makes sense to people that, oh yeah, even the people that weren't paying that much attention would say, oh yeah, I remember that SARS thing. And then I remember that MERS thing. And now we have SARS-CoV-2, which people are saying certificate of vaccination identification 2019, or the beginning of this medical technocracy, the scientism going forward, which we're gonna expound upon. It's just, to me, it seems like it's a setup. And what you're saying is we're lucky we got this, like, you know, attenuated, whatever this is, that it's not as bad as they're saying. I believe that it's killing people that got flu shots, the elderly people in the elder care facilities in New York and New Jersey. I believe that their immune systems were hijacked and so they died from that.
Well, see, this is interesting because I was watching some old footage about contagion and how contagion works, and he basically said that if you find a group of people that get the disease at the same time, that's actually a sign that it's not a contagious disease, that it was delivered in some other way
exactly.
to all the people at once.
Sure,
that
sure.
For a disease to be contagious, it has to go through your body, and your body has to start releasing or shedding the disease before it can actually infect another
right.
person.
Right.
So that is an interesting notion. For instance,
it plays
a friend
it.
Of mine. Well, a friend of mine's brother. Right? I mean, okay, I've been, I guess, fortunate enough to actually see what's happening a little bit behind the scenes because I know people in the medical industry. And so, again, one of the memes out there is that look at all these empty hospitals. They're lying to us. There's empty hospitals. Meanwhile, you've got these full hospitals because they're ICU units, intensive care, mm-hmm. right? And they're overfilled. We're overfilled right now in Utah here in the main city. So the idea that there's empty hospitals, well, yeah, because they stopped seeing people for normal things. Like mm-hmm. they didn't want anybody going to hospitals because of the contagion. Therefore, I'll give you a good example is like at the end of the year, hospitals especially hate the end of the year because that's when everybody says, oh, look, I still have a doctor's visit or something, some amount of money I can use before I hit a certain amount I have to pay myself. So I'm going to go to the hospital for some reason I don't need to go. And hospitals are making a shit ton of money because right. they're getting, you know, they're pretty much inviting people to come in and waste their time, by invoking the fact that they can still use their insurance. They haven't used their premium right. or however it works.
Whatever, right? Yeah, the minutiae of the numbers of the healthcare.
So now people are getting the cold and not going to the hospital, and of course they never needed to in the first place. That's the point. They're getting sick by going to the hospital and getting treated by doctors when they don't need treatment in the first place, and mm-hmm. they're not going in, they're not getting diagnosed with certain types of disease, and therefore the treatments aren't killing them and harming them to where they have to go back to the hospital. So right. I'd be interested to see the case of actual medically induced or iatrogenic, you know, doctor-caused death and harm is probably way down because people aren't going to the hospital, with the exception of the COVID thing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there's going to be some empty hospitals because, hey, who the hell wants to go to a hospital, the most infectious place on earth, during a pandemic, right? Or
yeah.
at least even a fake pandemic.
Right, so they get people to not show up. And, a guy goes in there and he goes, I'm hemorrhaging from my ear. And they're like, sorry, we're only taking COVID patients.
Yeah, exactly. Well, lots of money in the COVID. So yeah, there's.
I hate to laugh, but I mean that's probably what's been happening.
Well, there's a lot of there's so much disinformation out there, and people, you know, that's all they do in their spare time is make disinformation and think it's funny. For someone like me, I mean, that's hell because I have to then suffer when I use something that's not a primary source, but it's listed as a primary source. You know, these people, to me, I want to kill them because they're putting things out there that trip me up when I'm looking for the truth, when I'm looking for, you know, sourced material. Right. And here's some asshole that decides doing a deep fake is funny. Right. To the point now where nothing hardly can be counted on without triple checking, you know, if it's a primary source or not. To me, that's just, you don't know how much.
I get it. Frustrating for sure.
It's horrible.
Well, I mean, like even now. So with John Rappaport, who's done incredible work documenting back and it kicked in 2009 when he was covering that and doing his blog, his daily blogs. And now he's saying that, hey, how come we can't get the virus from the CDC? Their CDC, and I don't think he's saying that the virus doesn't exist, but what he's saying is how come you guys don't have the virus? How come you don't have it and you can't give us this information? So what do you think the reasons are for that? Now, I mean, people are going to believe whatever they want to believe. I listen to you because I know that I know of your integrity and I know of your honesty and you're doing what you do. And that's what I appreciate. And
well, I mean, you're listening to these doctors tell you that SARS was man-made and escaped from a lab and therefore MERS was as well because they're cousins and therefore COVID-2 or SARS-2 obviously is a gain of function of SARS-1 and MERS, right? So the question I have then is, I mean, because if that was true, right, there's no virus, well then, the fact that those French and those Indian scientists and all the papers that have come out that they took the virus and they broke it down and genetically found the orthologs of SARS, MERS, HIV, and maybe tuberculosis, I can't remember, all forced into this gain-of-function, mutation.
Right. And tuberculosis that kills 1.6 million, right? Tuberculosis kills 1.6 to 2 million a year.
Yeah, well, they're taking the orthologs, meaning the way that they communicate so that they can cause, again, that virus to communicate with humans, which can't happen in nature again. So, you know, and then, you know, the other thing to look yet. Well, okay, so as far as the why can't we get the virus, well, why would they give John Rappaport a virus?
Well, I mean, like, why can't we see it? Why can't we do it? I think he's asking legitimate questions.
I think you can. If you look at the reports I put in my documentary, that they're you know, pull them up. Right. What is the problem?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody.
I mean, any picture you're going to see of a microscopic virus is going to be worthless to you. It's, you know, for instance, this disinformation that's coming out about exosomes, that the exosome looks similar to a coronavirus, right? And then they're saying the coronavirus doesn't exist, that it's all exosomes. And right, well, okay, if you look at the picture of the coronavirus, it's a big blob with things that look, again, like the crowns, right? Mm-hmm. The corona, the balls. There's nothing about it that's going to make sense to you. And so what they do is they take that, and they make a model so that they can show you what it actually looks like. And that is what people are saying doesn't exist. Like, oh, you know, the pictures from NASA don't exist. This doesn't exist. Everything doesn't exist. Like this weird sense of nihilism has taken over people. And they're starting to believe metaphors are not metaphors. I mean, it's just the whole thing is just really bizarre to me because it's like, again, this religion that's happening. But, you know, to say that viruses don't exist because all we have are these models of them is really, I mean, it's...
Well, I think what's happening here is they're taking... I mean, the one thing, one of the most, you know, that people should lock onto, whether they believe in viruses or whether they don't believe that, you know, they operate the way that we've been told, is that Fauci and his band of just cunts, okay, male and female, are saying that this is a naturally occurring thing. They're lying bags of shit. I mean, obviously, they're all in the pay of Bill Gates. And the reaction and the overreaction to what they've been doing, and you know, Europe, areas of Europe going into lockdown for 4 more weeks and things like that, that is the danger. It's like, whether it's a, like you said, we're lucky we got this one. Now they overreact to it, and it's like it's, you know, World War Z virus.
Well, maybe that's not the right way of putting it. We're lucky that either this escaped or this was released. Or we're unlucky because this is just the first part of a biological weapon that will require a second part of us. And it's in the body waiting for the second part of the...
Or binary weapon.
Right, right. And that's, they talk about that in the documentary, in this panel discussion. They talk about, you know, how these things can fundamentally change the entire existence and notion of what it is to be human by altering DNA, or plants or animals or insects, right? They don't care that that's going to happen because all they care about is transhumanism anyway, right? So let me rephrase it.
No, I mean, I understand what you said.
Whatever was released, accidentally or on purpose, again, I'm not one that I could, that's not something I can say. What I can say is that we are at least lucky or, you know, I don't know what the word is. I mean, we're like dogs about to be put down and we only got the first shot, which doesn't kill us. It just puts us to sleep. I mean, we're like not lucky is probably the wrong word, but we're at least at the point where we can still do something about this. Now, here's the thing, man. Here's what I don't really understand. And you know, maybe I do, but if you know this guy Bill Gates is doing these horrible things, if you know Anthony Fauci, because he tells you this in the documentary, in the open forum, the public forum, he tells you that he's this primary funder through the NIH of these experiments, which literally are designed to wipe out the human population. They are biological weapons they are creating, but because they're calling them friendly and peaceful research, they're not considered as biological weapons. It's complete bullshit, right? And
so we had the moratorium on it. We had the moratorium.
Right, but you can't charge them under the Geneva Conventions if it's a peaceful act.
Exactly.
And that's what they're saying it is.
Yeah.
It's a pure, clearly a biological weapon, and the guy says in the open forum for the Homeland Security, he says, if we were making these, we would do the exact same thing as they are doing, but we would be guilty of treason and of creating biological weapons. But since these scientists are doing it under...
Free reign.
Under basically a word, a title, a flattering
Science.
Title, that says this is peaceful. Now, if you remember from the first documentary I did, I covered that law, and I went over the exceptions, and the exceptions for biological weapons research and all the things that will kill people basically amounted to anything you can think of, from research to, you know, the list is there. You could go watch it, but it basically gave an excuse to... for these people to be funded by the government or privately and do anything the hell they want as far as creating biological weapons in the lab, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then these labs that have horrible, horrible safety records, they admit that openly. And, you know, at the end, which, you know, it's amazing to hear this woman who is a basic researcher, and that's what they call it, she says, look, we're doing things that if they get out, we will have no control over. And so... You know, either way you look at it, whether it's released purposefully or accidentally, they have no liability. And
exactly.
I think that's what bothers me the most, is they don't feel any responsibility. There is no liability because there's no laws set up to say, hey, China released it, U.S. built it and released it, whoever released it is liable. That doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So you're all paying for medical insurance and shit to cover this thing when... government should be paying for it because government created it. They're responsible. Its property literally is floating in your body if you've got the virus. So, you know,
right.
Just like certain cancers are owned by certain companies. If it's in your body, that's their property. They should be paying to have it removed, to have you treated. But you're just the guinea pig. I mean, it's just the whole thing. So anyway, here's what I don't understand. Why is Bill Gates still walking around freely?
I wonder why, because I would strangle him myself if I got within fucking arm's reach of him.
Well, no, I mean,
dead man. Why'd you kill him?
You know,
yeah, why
any
not?
Take any other species in nature, right? Take ants. When an ant is obviously infected with a brain parasite, which is a cordyceps, and the ant starts acting differently than the rest of the ants. You know, ants are very predictable. They're constantly going in a line, constantly getting food, preparing for the winter. Not like the grasshopper, right? and we've all become grasshoppers. The ants notice that this other ant is acting differently, and they physically pick that ant up and remove it far away from the rest of the colony so that it doesn't infect the rest of the colony or doesn't harm anybody, right? Why, I ask again, is Bill Gates being allowed to exist? Okay, what he's done is punishable by death.
It is punishable by death. That's right. I mean, and the only reason, and this is very important that we need to, what we need to understand about Bill Gates is the reason why he's Mr. Microsoft, okay, is because his father was a very powerful lawyer attorney for the Rockefeller family. The Rockefeller family are the Rothschilds of America, and they've been given their instructions to do things like create the birth control pill, which devastates a female body, any number of different things. In 2010, they wrote a document called Lockstep, where it was a plan for what would take place in the eventuality that a pandemic would happen. And that this is what would happen. And in there it says, America, because they're such, you know, freedom-loving bags of shit, they proliferated the virus even further because they didn't want to lock down and they didn't want to kowtow to the new normal. Okay, and that's what we're hearing now out of Bill Gates. Well, America's not doing what they're supposed to do, so, like, I'm going to raise my hands up and down in the air like I've got Asperger's or something, and I'm going to be like, you know, the vaccine's coming, which is probably, you know, the zero in the binary weapon chain. And, you know, he really, I mean, I'm with you, dude. I'm with you. He sickens me. I know who he is. I know what he is. And the only reason that he was Mr. Microsoft and that they have this global control over technology, you know, Windows and things like that, is because he is a Rockefeller, you know, like his father, you know, generational Rockefeller stooge. And that's who he is. And I hate him. His father just died of dementia, I imagine. So if he doesn't know by now, that was caused by some injections or whatever. But they actually got together, Fauci and the Rockefellers in the 1980s at some kind of eugenics conference where I imagine they planned a lot of these things.
I think was his father perhaps part of Paperclip?
It very well could be, because
the Nazi scientists that America said, we'll not charge you with Nuremberg crimes if you come over and do all your dirty work for us.
I imagine that is a very strong possibility. Operation Paperclip. Yep.
But, you know, and yes, I am not at all going to dismiss or, you know, just because the virus itself is a real thing, does not in any way dismiss the fact that it's being used. Excellent. You know, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Oh, yeah.
Well, never let a good virus go to waste either, right?
Sure.
I mean, shit. Let's get it and make it worse. And right. You know, by putting a gain of function on it, you can actually control genetically, that is, eugenically, who it's going to infect and who, right. You know, there's so much to this.
Yeah.
We have to remember that eugenics is just genetics. Genetics is part of eugenics, actually.
Right.
It's one of the listed attributes of good eugenics. And we also have to remember that eugenics is not a white, it's not white people. It's all races have had eugenics. There's plenty of black eugenicists. There's plenty of Arab eugenicists. There's plenty, right? This is about preserving and improving the race. Well, race, you got to realize, means family. So if I'm a black man and I see, say an abundance of sickle cell anemia, right? Something that affects a lot of black people and right. more than anyone else.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm going to want to eugenically or genetically improve my family, my race, from that genetic defect, right? And it's a perfectly reasonable thing when you think about it until, I mean, if anything, eugenics is a dual-use tool as well,
exactly.
because the thing about saying, well, yeah, I'd love to be able to fix genetically something that harms so many people gets turned into, well, look, sure, I could fix it, but I could also make it worse, or I could make it more virulent, or I could make it spread. And therefore, anything you create that is for the good is also dual use of concern, means that it can also be used for bad. I created nuclear fission, which can power the entire Earth. Oh, well,
it can also melt the skin off your body.
Nuclear fission and make a nuclear bomb that could kill everybody on Earth, right? That's right, dual right. use. And that is why this research is so concerning to people like me, and why they, of course, love it and allow it. Because everything these basic researchers do, make no mistake, I told you it's being published, and therefore it's going to the military. It's going to every, what they call, bad actor in every terrorist, every asshole in his garage that thinks he's a do-it-yourself scientist or whatever. You know, it's going out to everyone. So the ability to use what appears to be good information, even the cure for cancer, can be turned into a stronger cancer.
Sure.
Right? So the whole thing just needs to be, an end needs to be put to science as it's been redefined. In other words, scientism, which, you know, we really need to talk about, because that's what's behind all this. All of this. So what really got me onto this is that every research report and journal entry that I was reading when it came to these was always, they were all doing this extra work in synthetic biology, synthetic environments, synthetic this, synthetic that, which is not part of the purpose of the study. In other words, they're using funding to do research that has nothing to do with the stated purpose of the project, which should mean it shouldn't be getting funding, right? So, and I noticed that almost all of these reports, all of these studies, while they talked about that research, it would never be in the conclusion, it would never be in the introduction, or the the first part of it, you know, the summary. The conclusion would never have anything to do with the study. And if you read the study itself, which you have to do because the conclusion is worthless, you're finding all this transhumanist research going on.
Yep.
In other words, synthetic environment, synthetic biology, synthetic, you know, it's going on behind the scenes.
Right.
And like, then not being reported as part of the actual study itself in the conclusion or whatever.
Like, so the Beatle. Like the Beatle portion of your documentary that was in like the first couple hours, where they had nodes connected to this beetle, and they were sitting there moving a joystick to it, you know, and it would move the beetle's right arm, or if they moved it, it would move the beetle's left arm. And then, like, I see you know, you're putting the notes on the screen saying, this is like hell. Just imagine, like, I mean, even that beetle, and they'll say, well, it's for research, right? Like you're saying, why? We don't need to do this. We don't need to hook nodes up to a beetle to then be able to make it, you know, roll over and take a crap and do all these other things. Meanwhile, they're sitting there saying, wow, this is just so awesome. That beetle is just, he just, and he's like, I think that beetle just gave me the finger. Oh, yeah, we programmed that in too.
Well, yeah, so, and then they say, how long does the beetle live? Oh, a beetle has a 3-month life, 3 to 6 month life cycle. How long have you left those electrodes on the beetle and just let it continuously force it to move its legs as if it's walking without any control over its own movement? And what do you say, 3 weeks or three? It's some ridiculous amount of time. Can you imagine what it would feel like? Because you're using your own energy and your own muscular system, even if you got a cramp, you would still be moving, and the cramp would just get worse and worse and worse, right?
Yeah, the spiritual hell. I think you wrote on the screen. It was like a kind of spiritual hell.
This is transhumanist for purposes of transhumanism. Everything basically goes back to the control and manipulation of the human model, which, and that's what all this synthetic stuff is, and so. Let's backtrack a little, because before you see that beetle, you see this program run by DARPA, which is scary as hell, and other really, really sinister organizations that you know, it's called insect allies. And what they want to do is they want to alter the genetic DNA, the system of the bug. They want to inject the bug with certain types of viral materials,
sure,
and then send those bugs out to infect plants, to infect this, to infect, mm-hmm, right? And they're talking about warehouses and warehouses all over the world of these bugs that can be, that are just, you know, you're growing bugs essentially for the purpose of injecting them and releasing them whenever, oh, look over there, there's a mosaic tobacco virus that's destroying all tobacco. Let's release the bugs, and it'll go and change the DNA of the tobacco, and tobacco will never be the same, but hey, that doesn't matter. We're going to protect it from this virus, right? We're going to, whatever it is, they actually want to get to have bugs, insects, you know, oh, there's an emergency in Guyana. Mm-hmm. Let's inject or infect these bugs with a virus, release the bugs, and then the bugs will essentially reprogram the DNA of the plant.
And sorry, we forgot to tell you, this was a side effect that we're seeing now, is that they have this lust for human flesh. And sorry if you got eaten by this horde or swarm of beetles that we, you know, sent out there. But, you know, this is scientists. We need to move forward.
I have a feeling they're going to tell us, well, don't worry, we're making them all male or female. Well, remember Jurassic Park?
Oh, right.
The thing that was Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, we're doing this so that they don't reproduce in nature, or they don't. Right. But so you got to understand, in nature, the viral materials that are in nature that infect plants and then infect all these things, they're actually, they have a reason to exist. They're natural. They're purposeful. It's like Microsoft sending you an update to your computer to improve its performance,
oh,
right?
Yeah, we know.
I know that's a loaded statement, right?
Indeed.
But, right, and then there's the bad kind of viruses. In other words, things that come in and reprogram your computer to do bad things, right? Mm. Well, it's the same thing that's going on. It's not the same thing, but it's the same concept that's going on in nature. We're supposed to get measles. We're supposed to, and this is all in my next documentary, we're supposed to get measles. We're supposed to get chickenpox. We're supposed to get these viruses. They are part of nature. They're not man-made. They're there for a reason. They're not to be feared, right? We should be concentrating on how maybe to lessen the symptoms to the point where people don't die from them. Sure, I can understand that. But on the other hand, if you don't get the symptoms of chickenpox, in other words, if you get a vaccine with a dead virus or a man-made virus, you're not getting essentially those essential updates for your computer from Microsoft. All you're getting are viruses made by people who want to harm you.
Yeah, we are a biological computer.
Well,
and we are of nature.
That because that's scientism. That is the view of scientism, that you know, we're nothing more than machines, basically. But biological machines, thus synthetic biology, synthetic this, synthetic that. I don't want to put that across.
Exactly.
I'm only making, see, this is where we lose touch with metaphor, where I don't believe the metaphor. The metaphor is just to make you understand how nature works. And it is, you know, in my opinion, they modeled computers after nature, because they want to take over nature and control it. But you should never confuse the artificial or the synthetic with the real. They are completely opposed to each other in every possible way. So you cannot say they're the same. But you can use the metaphor. And for some reason, we've lost the art of simile, metaphor, and all. You know, people actually believe we live in a computer simulation where it's supposed to be a metaphor.
Hologram.
All that stuff. Mm-hmm. The concept of that there's infinite universes or infinite worlds all stacked, that's supposed to be a metaphor. It's supposed to be an understanding of fate or choice and what that leads to, right? You're not supposed to believe it as a real thing. But in scientism, which is this religion of science that requires no scientific proof, for instance the Big Bang, right? Something from nothing. We basically have this religion that has replaced true science or the study of nature in order to be more in harmony with it. We now take nature, reprogram it in order to make us, you know, happy in a very destructive way.
Right.
Because for some reason we're not satisfied with the way things are and always will be.
Well, I have a theory. I have a theory about the Big Bang. as they were trying to tell us how nothing exploded and made everything, they were all thinking about an adult film called The Big Bang. And then what they said was, we're not going to do this. We're going to say that the Big Bang created all of us. And then you can tie it to the sexual nature of it, because obviously we're a product of, I don't want to be crude, but a Big Bang. And so there you go.
And so the
I want to do that in stand-up. Somebody's going to steal it. Someone's going to get that.
The sperm, or the panspermia,
right,
is caused from one giant cock being...
Exactly.
I mean, the vibration of the universe caused the explosion. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, it's just, the whole thing is just ridiculous.
Let's add a little bit of levity here. I don't do this when I'm having conversations with people, and I used to do a lot of interviews, but now not so much. I'm speaking with Clint Richardson, author, documentary filmmaker, an incredible researcher. A guy who sits there and reads and reads and reads. And when you go back to Bill Hicks, the incredible comedian, where he explains how he's sitting in like Alabama after doing a show. And this, woman waitress walks up and says, and he's reading, and she goes, "What y'all reading for?" He goes, "Mostly because I don't want to be a waitress in a waffle shop in Alabama." So the importance of reading is, it's fundamental. Saturday morning cartoons.
I think the fundamental part about reading is knowing how to decipher what
I know. Interpretation. That was always my thing, man. Like, I'm reading this and I'm having a hard time, kind of breaking it down. There's certain topics that I have an easier time with. But I'm not a really strong reader, and I'm not happy about it at all. But then I look at you, as I said any number of times, I really truly believe, if we are children of an intelligence, okay, you are one of that intelligence's greatest creations. Come on now.
Seriously. Oh, stop.
So you're reading. I mean, the stuff that you read, I would go insane if I had to do that much reading. So I'm like, I'll just leave it up to Clint.
Yeah, but what it boils down to, I don't consider myself special in any way. The only thing that I do that I think other people don't is, if I come across a word that I either don't know the word, or I can't quite figure out why they used that word in that particular instance,
right,
therefore it must have a dual meaning. Okay. And then, eventually you find out every word has a dual meaning, because that's how they control us. Every word we think we're saying, we're actually saying something opposite.
Right, and and this was, when I started listening to you, it really wasn't about viruses and different things like that. The thing that fascinated me was the corporation nation, and the fact that America is a corporation. It is not a country. And then as we, as you started breaking down these things, and of course, then you got into the genealogy, which I actually dug through just recently through YouTube to find the CBS Morning News, where they say right there that Barack Obama is six cousins with Dick Cheney. And I'm actually sending it to people, like copying it over to, one of my video sites. But I mean, you did the genealogy, and I was just like, all right, it's all making sense now. Just like Greg said, he was like, you got to listen to Clint. This guy's making a lot of sense. He's putting everything into perspective. This is what we are. This, patriot movement and all of these other things. People don't know who they are. We are just commoners. And right now, this whole, and at some point we'll get into the, into some of the political stuff where you can enlighten people on just what a complete and total farce here is. I'm a political atheist at this point. I don't, but it was the corporation nation that really did it. And then on top of that, are you kidding me? This guy's talking about virology now. Are you kidding me? And I'm like, I gotta listen. And so, all right. So you've really kind of, you put it out there. And I want to add something to you. It's time for men to be men. To actually do something to tell your family, the people that you love, that something's going on here. It isn't quite clear, like the song, right? Right? There's something going on here. what it is ain't exactly clear. That was during the Vietnam War, okay? And then I kind of, I wanted to start doing some, you know, like song memes, right? So we're going over to the wholesale club, and I get out. I'm thinking, for some reason, I'm thinking of the Air Supply, that really geeky, like, Australian band. And then we're, you know, oh, you gotta get your mask up. Mask up, you subjugated fucks, right? And it's like, I'm thinking of the Air Supply, and I'm like, I'm all out of air. I'm dying without it. It's this fucking mask. I want to burn it. You know, and I just wanted to start singing that. And I think that's the only way that through song somehow is going to get people to understand.
That's funny you say that, because
a fucking joke.
I know we've talked about it. I don't know if I've ever talked openly about it, but I kind of gave up.
Mm. Yeah, man, we've had conversations. You know, I visited you. I went to the beautiful corporation known as Utah.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I want to go back to music. And I've been writing songs and stuff for a while because that, you know, sometimes that feels like the only sane place there is. It's only the only way. And like you said, it's so powerful, you know. And the kind of girls say, but I am at the point where I'm just about finished with, you know, I feel like this was a journey. It took up a major part of my life, probably some of my better years, right? Because I'm now 47, I think. I lost count because I don't really believe
it. I did it. I did at one point. I'm talking to my sister, and I'm like, I'm like, I'm 42. She's like, no, you're 44.
I'm like, yeah. You're trying, hole.
Oh my God. So, yeah, well, I mean, I get it.
If you believe the Gregorian calendar, you know, if you're still stuck in that ancient timeline that they set up, the Jesus timeline, so that you're, I always find that interesting because there's the Jewish timeline,
That's the most important one, honestly.
There's so many different timelines. But what's so interesting about the Jewish timeline and the Christian or Jesus timeline, the structure they set up and said this is year zero, is that the Jewish, you know, the reason they say the Bible is, or the earth is, 2,000 years old? More so, is because the Jewish timeline starts at the creation, whereas the Jesus timeline starts at the birth of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you take that into consideration, that, you know, the year is 30, whatever it is in the on that particular timeline, the Jewish timeline, because they're starting their calendar at life, creation. We're starting ours based upon a fiction of the church. Basically, they created a timeline to control people. So if you believe in time, and time governs your life, whereas God is timeless, right? The universe is timeless, you know, I learned this from a Twilight Zone. It changed my life. I was watching the Twilight Zone reruns, you know, and I watched the one called How to Serve Man.
Okay.
Have you seen that one?
I'm going to write that down.
So I said How to Serve Man, and basically the aliens come and they land and they're saying we come in peace, right? And they give us a book, and the book, they translate the title loosely to How to Serve Man, as if the aliens are there to serve us, right? With all their technology and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to, if you don't want to have it ruined, then stop listening, right? Spoiler alert. Turns out it's a cookbook. How to Serve Man, right?
Okay.
So, there you go. So they're taking people as tourists back onto their ships back to their world. Right, people think, oh, this is great. They're here to serve us, but they're actually here to serve us as food.
Right.
I love it. And they take this guy on the ship, and while he's on the ship, he says, "What time is it?" Right? They're traveling through space, and because we're so Earth-centric, because we're so basically we revolve around ourselves. We don't, you know, we've been trained to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
The aliens answer to me changed my whole life, changed my whole way of looking at things. And the answer was a factual statement that time doesn't exist in space.
Right.
How often do you hear this time and space and da 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 da, all this scientism, right? But if you think about it, if you're in the middle of space, there is no freaking fixed reference. On Earth, you have a son, and however that system works, you can count on the timing of it, and you can calculate it and use mathematics and scientifically come up with a system that keeps track of time. But if you're in the middle of space, there is nothing that you can look at. You're not, you know, you're just sitting there. Nothing is happening around you. You're just stationary, or you're traveling through. There is no time. And so his answer was, well, on Earth, the time is this. But in space, there is no such thing as time. And that threw me into, I mean, the statement itself is so self-evident.
Right.
Right? But I never considered that before. And it threw me into a spire where I started researching all, you know, what is time? What is the calendar? What is all this? And it turns out it's all a system of control. That's all it is. It's just a way, you know, you take the Farmer's Almanac, wonderful, right? Talk about dual use again. Farmer's Almanac, great, great tool. But if you take that, you create a whole system based on time. And see, what I figured out then is that contracts, right? There's, what is the devil's tool? The devil's tool is the contract. See, the devil can only influence you. He can't actually interfere, right? He can't actually physically interfere, but he can influence you. And the greatest influence is to get you to sign a contract, which is why in all the stories, the devil's trying to get you to sign a contract, right? Sell away your soul. Well, you don't just say, okay, I give you my soul. No, you actually have to sign a contract, right? The contract is binding. So how are we controlled? But what's the greatest tool, or what does the contract rely on? And the answer to that is time. Time, which doesn't exist in nature, but on Earth can be recorded in a specific mathematical scientific way, right? And used for good, but also used for obviously our control. And so think about this. Just you know, this is what made me realize the whole thing is a farce. A contract has no power without time. Time is money, remember that. Money is a representation of time, right? Of labor, basically. Let's just imagine that I have a mortgage. And my mortgage says every month I must pay, well, whatever, $1,000, right? Well, what would it say if there was no time? Which there isn't. But the artificial construct that man has created to track time, or the amount of space, if you will, that passes between, you know, however you want to define what time really is, right? We have this word time. But without time, there's no debt. Without money, which is time, there is no debt. There is no contract because there's no debt, right? The whole thing relies on time. And that's why that one episode of The Twilight Zone completely changed my whole understanding of everything.
And so when the guy was wondering what time it was, the alien probably said, or what would have been really, really appropriate, was to put it in a perspective that you would understand, it's dinner time.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, if you think about that, it just, you know, every domino starts to fall because time doesn't exist. Time is not a physical thing that can be tracked. You know, it's an artifice of man, in other words, right? And it just, the whole system collapses without time. Because remember, time is money, right? Money is, you've heard that before. Everybody's heard that. And it's a true statement, because time really represents, or money really represents the, you're exchanging it for some labor, something, right? Even if it's a product, it's representing the labor behind that product, which is why some things are more valuable in mammon than others, right? Art, for instance, or, you know, something unique is more valuable because, right, it took the time and the, it's just, the whole thing goes out the window when, and then suddenly, well, what does that mean? That means money is useless unless you are in the time domain, right? Because how can I pay my bills if there's no time limit? Who would pay a bill if, how would I collect anything from you if I had no ability to say, well, it's due by this time or this date, right? So the whole calendar system is based on time, which is money, and it's, right? Everything changes when you come to that realization, right? Which is why time, which is money, time is the absolute foundation of everything, right? Yeah. It's amazing, right?
I mean, like, what about the sky clock? I mean, there were for years and years, everybody went by the sky, you know, they would they would say, you know, here it is this time of year, it's going to get cold, it's going to get warm, crops are going to grow, all this. I would say that, you know, the thing that would be closest to nature would be observing it that way. But of course, man has, you know, taken over and bastardized, you know, daylight savings, this and that.
Sure.
Blam.
Sure. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with developing a system like that until dual use, right? Until someone says, well, I can use that system to control people. And I can make money, which represents that time, and I can put people in time debt, right? How do the wealthy pay their debts? With money. How do the poor people pay their debt? With time. They go to prison, or they become indebted and have to work off the debt. But rich people can use money because money represents the time of poor people.
Okay.
You either have money or you have time, and there is no difference between the two.
It's just the difference is in the person. Or
one represents the other.
Yeah, exactly.
You either have an artificial construct that is money, which represents time, or mm-hmm. you have a lot of time but no money. And so the money is used and created by wealthy people, the main races, right, the main families,
mm-hmm.
to enslave the poor people, the non-royal families, and keep them in mm-hmm. debt, all based on time.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, like, just recently, guy over at the World Health Organization put out there, and he's somebody well known in that organization. He said, lockdowns don't work. The only thing that they do, and he expounded upon it in a number of different ways, but he said, lockdowns don't work. What they do is they make poor people poorer. And then what did Europe do? They said, all right, let's lock down.
Right?
You know, it's just like, all right, yeah, well, okay. I mean, they're killing
us. My opinion,
when
it comes to the masks, to me, it's really easy to understand, okay? Do you remember back, I don't know, wasn't that long ago, where everybody was afraid of Sharia law and, you know, all the Arab Spring and all that fear back when we didn't have a virus to be afraid of necessarily? And do you remember that we were, they were always reporting on the news, for instance, the notion that women would be made to wear the burqa? To cover their face?
Sure.
So what do you think the mask is? What's the ultimate form of subjugation?
Well,
of
I think, absolutely. Sure. I mean, I think it has dual use.
If you think about, you know, based on all the research, the masks do not work in any way. Hospitals even stopped wearing them in surgery because they don't work. Right? They, if you think about what the mask is, it's just a new form of burqa. That's all it is. It's a form of subjugation.
There you go.
Global
subjugation. Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, if the stories are true, NIH, Fauci researched the Spanish flu, and then in their document, which was Dr. Colleen Huber, proliferated out through the Twitter sphere, that NIH did the research and found that a huge percentage of people that died from bacterial pneumonia were because of extended mask wearing. And then they tried to, next thing you know, Snopes is out there and we're like, no, that's not true. I'm talking to a couple of nurses, you could say, the other day saying, hey, I heard that PCR test was really not supposed to be used for infectious disease by the creator, the Nobel laureate, you know, Kerry Mullis. And on top of that, it gives a 50 to 80% false positive. And then what they did was they went in and they went to propagandafornurses.com, and she read the exact opposite, that it was 50 to 80% false negative. So like you might, it could come back that you don't have it, but then you do and you're like spreading the disease. And I'm thinking to myself, I had to walk out of the room and I was just like, I got to grab this phone in the other room because they had a phone that wasn't working. And it turned out that they just needed to be replaced. I'm thinking that it's like a major network piece of equipment that's crapping out. But the guy called back, the phone vendor. He said, yeah, we just had to replace the phones. And I'm like, terrific. propagandized.
I've tried to share with friends and even non-friends, you know, these papers that show how you know, doctors are the number one cause of bankruptcy, of death, of destruction of health issues, right? 10,000 medical mistakes a day that cause harm, and 440,000 deaths attributed to medical error, and they don't believe it. No. Or I don't know if it's a belief system. Again, the second you get pinned as something, you know, some flattering title, you then protect that title against all reason and rationale. And mm-hmm. it's really amazing to see that, because I see it in close friends too, and I have to really you know, pull back mm-hmm. any really? Knowledge you have of something mm-hmm. because they are guilty of scientism. They are guilty of having a belief system based on science, which in this case is medical science, the worst kind, right? And you're talking about, and here's what I realized, you know, and I mentioned this towards the end of the documentary, because I always remembered when I long ago I looked up the word technology in the old dictionaries, and it always meant the same thing, art or artifice, something artificial. Technology mm-hmm. is art, right? And we are calling technology as science. But in fact, art is completely 100% opposed, of course, to science, because science is a study of nature. You would not scientifically study something artificial, because essentially you would not be able to get that reproducibility or that clarity, because it's not real. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not bound by the laws of nature, mm-hmm. and therefore you can't show it mm-hmm. to be reproducing a natural effect. Right.
Well, that's another thing, just to that I read some report just recently that there's scientific tests and standards, if you will, over the years, there's a number of them, large percentage, that they went back to try to recreate, and they've not been able to get the same outcome. And then, of course, that turns into people not believing in science, or not having the confidence in science, just like everybody's losing confidence. Get this is going to make it. They're losing confidence in the voting, in the political voting process.
Yeah, well, it's science, right? See, what we confuse are the terms art and science, because you know, the arts and sciences are placed together in liberal arts, right?
Right.
It's, you can't confuse art and science, because see, art is the practice of something. Okay, science is the theory behind the practice. Mm-hmm. So you come up with a theory and use scientific method to try to prove or disprove the theory. And you don't really have if you're using the method correctly, you're not pro or anti the outcome. You want to know one way or the other, is this true or is this false? Therefore, you're applying the method correctly. Mm-hmm. But in scientism, if the consensus of climate change so-called experts or scientists say that there's climate change happening, it must be true, right? There's no evidence needed, you know, it's man is, you know, all of these different things, that the scientism is a religious belief system not requiring science. Now, you said you didn't get through the whole documentary. I put at least 20 of those studies in there and read some of them.
And this was
75% of scientific studies cannot be reproduced. Psychology studies are the same way, cannot be reproduced. And therefore they're not science. They're scientism.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. And that's, you know, and then that's, I think that's how they slowly start moving people into this faux science, where they're just like, all right, well, they're not going to be able to reproduce it. Then let's just go with it, because I want to go along to get along, because if I don't go along to get along, then what happens? Then I lose my stature as a person in the fake society that we live in. So there you go.
What has to happen right now is the knowledge gap has to be filled back in with rational, sane, scientific knowledge, which, you know, when I say scientific knowledge, I mean knowledge of nature, knowledge of how nature works and how we interact with it. I don't mean anything else.
Right.
And towards the end there, like I said, I define terms, mm-hmm. right? Art is technology, and art is
artificial.
Opposed to nature. Art is opposed to science. You can't look at a picture and say that it's nature. Right. You can't look at a computer and say, hey, that's growing a tree.
Well, I think this is the thing here. I think this is the big thing that people have a problem with. Like, if I didn't know what you know and the things that we've spoken about over the last number of years, I would listen to you and say, but science has given us so many things, guy. And now it's like, and I think, and then of course they would have this, like, this detraction from what you're saying, or they would kind of like tone you out. But what you're saying is, we're doing these things and it's going to hurt us really, really bad.
Well, there's
if we continue to do it. Yeah, I mean,
there's,
yeah.
There's a scale, if you will, yes. And that scale
degrees.
Is,
yeah,
it
degrees,
goes.
Yeah.
It goes from a pure and happy life under the law and laws of nature to a miserable spiritual hell, which is obeying man's law or technology, right? Art. And the more you go towards technology, the more you go towards what is not real, what is man-made, the more you become dependent on what man creates, which we're calling science, but we should be calling art. Okay, so we're falling into artifice, which is essentially the devil. Okay, it's a metaphor for the devil. We're falling into artificial things, which means that, I'll give you an example. If I create a virus or something that is viral that can attach to your cells and transfer its DNA, which is exactly what the vaccine is going to be, by the way. It's an RNA-based vaccine that is programmed to change your DNA to so-called make you not express the symptoms of COVID. Okay, that's not making you immune. That's fundamentally changing your system so that somewhere else down the line you're going to be sick from something else.
And you're not going to know it until it kills you.
And then you'll be dependent on whatever man creates. See, the more artifice you take upon yourself, which you could say is the mark of the beast, the more you take, the more dependent you're going to be, and the more addicted you're going to be to the artifice, because you can no longer exist in nature. You see, what man creates, as far as disease, cannot be necessarily cured by nature, because once you start tangling with DNA and RNA, and you make something into a synthetic
you can't go back.
Existence, right? You can't, you know, for instance, I mean, just to be obvious and basic, nature certainly is not going to be able to heal your mechanical heart.
Right.
The disease you get in your mechanical heart could be rust, right? Oxidation. It could be all kinds of things, but none of those things nature can cure. And so even on the microscopic level, we're talking about viruses or things that are viral, is a better way to say it, things that can spread dis-ease, not when you're not at ease because you're not in harmony with nature. Well, the more you gravitate towards that, which we're calling science, but should be called art because that's what it is, and it is opposed to science, it is opposed to nature, the more you gravitate towards that, the more you accept it, the more you get addicted to it, the more you love what you should hate, the more disease you're going to get, because you're not in tune with nature. You're getting out of tune with everything from the vibrational frequency to these little updates that nature sends to you. Well, nature can no longer give you chicken pox or your children chicken pox or the measles or all these harmless diseases, and therefore your epigenomic switches are not going to be reprogrammed to make you immune to all the other diseases that chickenpox was designed by nature to make you immune to. So you're going to get cancer, you're going to get all these things. And these are now studies that have come out that show, yes, a vaccinated child will perhaps not get whooping cough or perhaps not get the symptoms of the disease. Doesn't mean they're not getting the disease, right? But because they're not expressing the symptoms, their body's not going through the full symptomatic response, the epigenome is not being reprogrammed. And therefore, you're not getting that essential Microsoft update. You're not, your computer, your body, your machine, if you will, as a metaphor, is not getting nature's updates. And therefore, I didn't get whooping cough, but instead I got ADD, cancer, autism, right? That's what these studies are showing when they can compare unvaccinated kids, for instance, with vaccinated kids. The vaccinated kids are showing, you know, 2,000 times more chance of cancers. Four or five times autism, this, that, and the other. Right?
And they're all over at the children's hospitals in your area. And just know that large percentages, if not all of them, are in there sick because they went to the doctor and their parents decided that they were going to follow the protocol.
Well, and you know what? I'll tell you one other thing that really bothers me. It's a great system of control in and of itself to make your children sick so that your whole attention goes towards your children.
Sure.
Meanwhile, the whole world is being fucked over, which means your children will be even more enslaved than you already are. Yeah. And you can't do anything about it because your whole time is fixated on your autistic or some other form of damaged child. What a brilliant weapon that is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when
your children are being used against you. I mean, that's amazing. Amazing. Yeah. You got to give these guys credit. They're sick as fuck. They're psychopathic, sociopathic, narcissistic, and they're in charge. And they're allowed to do all this stuff. They're being funded by the NIH. They're being funded by governments.
World Health Organization.
Again, at some point, you see, even the maxims of law that govern this society say that, you know, what's the famous quote about the constant, you know, the Declaration of Independence, when your government gets out of control, you have the right to replace that government, right? When the maxims of law say that the law of God must always be higher than the legal law, the law of man, well, it's time to invoke that. I'm sorry, it's not unlawful to say that. It's not treasonous to say that, because we're dealing with a corporation. We're not dealing with a real legitimate source of government. We're dealing with something we've contracted with to be employees or citizens of, to be under subjugation to, because we're not able to govern ourselves. That's why it was created, for men who cannot govern themselves, and men who do not value freedom, who do not value, you know, and all these fake patriots and all this patriot truth movement is starting, I think, to finally come around to that understanding after,
sure.
You know,
it's inevitable. It was inevitable.
You know, there's still plenty of disinfo out there to make people, and plus banning people like me, you know, but you got to understand that it's, like you said, at some point, men have to become men again.
We have to stand up
and not allow this to happen anymore. And we're at that point. That's the point of this documentary, is we're past the point. Yeah. We're at the point where they have now at their fingertips an arsenal of diseases, viral things that they can release and kill us all in days.
And that they, and understand this, that they have a leash that they can protect themselves while affecting other people. I mean, they've been able to use, you could say, scientific methods to be able to do the things that they've done as far as chimeric gain of function. At the same time, they would never release something unless they had, like Patrick said any number of times, unless they had a leash on it. And so they can do these things.
That might be true. In this case, I'm not so sure, because to listen to these people, they're psychopathic. They don't care about the results or the consequences.
Right, how many people are going to starve because of the overreaction?
I think Patrick is right about most things, but in this case, I don't think Patrick might be. Yeah. I mean, in this case, you're dealing with unknown things, right? You're creating something in the lab. I don't think there's a way. Well, you know, let me take that back, because that brings us into another subject that I didn't really cover in the documentary that really needs to be covered. And that is that every single medication that has been put out to treat the symptoms of COVID, do you know what those medications are?
I know that Remdesivir, and we're talking the hydroxychloroquine and things like that, but I think you're probably going in another direction on that, or no?
Well, do you know what they are designed to treat?
Malaria, parasites. Parasites.
No.
Well, that's what this one guy said, but I'm curious. Obviously,
well, parasites and viruses, same thing.
Same thing. Okay. Same thing.
Okay. A virus is essentially a parasite in the larger sense of the word that hasn't completed its life cycle, if you will. It hasn't completed its purpose. It's like any other parasite. It has to go through and inject itself into something in order for it to be carried to somewhere else and then expand, and the disease happens, right? Mm-hmm. So in that sense, a parasite, a virus, and a parasite are the same word. And I'm going to do an article about that here real soon too. But no, what disease, or what I should say, what virus do all these drugs have in common that they are supposed to treat or prevent the spread of? What did I say? See, I'm gonna test you here. What did I say they added to the coronavirus
HIV
to make it transmissible to humans?
HIV.
What are all the drugs that they're using to treat coronavirus?
HIV type drugs.
They are HIV drugs, every single one of them.
What? How close are they to the AZT, which apparently was AZT, super deadly, super deadly?
That is a whole nother story. That is a whole nother Dr. Anthony Fauci criminal story, right? Because you got to understand, AZT was supposed to be sort of a, well, what it was and what it is and why so many people died is because AZT is what's called a DNA terminator. Okay, it doesn't allow your DNA or your cells to reproduce.
Oh, so they don't replicate like they
and
might
I
do.
Sometimes wonder if that wasn't part of transhumanism too, because that's really dealing with telomeres and aging and all that stuff. So I'm wondering if AZT was not just some experiment that they did on people, because they were, you know, the goal has always been anti-aging, right? Immortality, transference of consciousness into a computer, all that shit, right? So the immortality thing, they consider aging a disease. And that's the sick part about it. They're psychopathic, okay? Mm-hmm. They're not happy with the life cycle that they're given, which has a purpose. You live, you die, dust to dust. It's the way of existence, right?
Sure.
But they're not happy with that, so they want immortality, like, because they consider themselves gods. They are the creators of their own universe, right? They want to recreate everything in their own image. Right? That's why scientism and is a religion. It's the worst kind of religion you can think of.
And when you say they, just for listeners now and listeners, you know, down the road.
Well, you know,
sum it up in a couple sentences. Who are these people? And
you know, in truth, we're all guilty of,
right,
of having beliefs that people that the scientific community, as they call themselves, have put forward, from the Big Bang to evolution to, right, and there's nothing wrong with the word evolution as something that actually happens. In fact, evolution means unfolding, and that's what prions do. For instance, they go in, cause the healthy prion that's already in your body to unfold and refold or evolve into a new form, which is contagious, scrappy, or whatever, and then that causes all these degenerative diseases, right? So that's why they call it a prion disease. It's not the prions necessarily causing it, it's the evolution. And see, what you find is transhumanism is forced evolution. It is the unfolding of man. Jonas Salk wrote a book called The Unfolding of Man, which is evolution, the forced evolution of things. Evolution, you know, is a thing that happens in nature because of environmental causes. It's not the basis of all life. It's not the, right, the whole, in fact, what disproves that theory of evolution most of all is the fact that bat and human viruses are not susceptible to each other. Bats and humans can't have babies. Bears and giraffes can't have babies. Humans and dogs can't have babies. And thank God, sheep and humans can't have babies, because we'd have a lot of them.
That's
really sick people out there, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, the whole system is based on the fact that your blood is not corrupted with foreign life forms. You're not injecting, right? There's no way to get these diseases without them being injected into you, right? That's the, you know, what you eat gets pushed out of your body, 95% of it usually, right? So you're, you know, a good example is if I eat blood, which if I'm having any kind of meat, I am doing, right? Then the blood is treated as a food product. It is digested. The nutrients are taken from the blood and everything else is excreted through the waste system. But if I inject blood, it's not being digested. It is acting as it should.
And it corrupts the blood.
It is blood, and it goes in and it does its thing. But you see, it's confused, and our body is confused because it's a foreign blood. And again, it causes that autoimmune response where we create antibodies against foreign blood. And guess what? Serum, right, is blood, mm-hmm. a clear part of the blood. And that is what's used most of all, cow serum, for instance, in vaccines. I mean, it's to grow the substrates and all that stuff.
Right.
It's serum amazing. Yeah, it's amazing sickness. That this isn't more common knowledge, because it's so, again, it's self-evident, so obvious that you should not have living things being injected into your body, bypassing all the safety measures that are there, right? If you breathe something in, most of it gets excreted. If you eat something, you know, it's pissed out of you, or it's crapped out of you, it goes out of your sweat glands, whatever it is. The body is designed to get rid of all that stuff. But if you're bypassing all of that, which you're doing with any injection, and we're not just talking about vaccines. How about human growth hormone? That's used to be, anyway, before they made it synthetic, and who knows what the synthetic stuff's going to do, but the used to be cow blood, right? Cow bovine growth hormone that you're putting into your body, and it's causing cancers and, like, I mean, so, and again, what is a cancer, right? Turns out, from what I understand, cancer is just stem cell growth, right? Stem cell. Why are you growing lung tissue in your pancreas, or why are you growing? Why do you have some other organ growing as a cancerous cells in some organ that they're not supposed to be? That's because those cells are not being controlled or programmed to be, you know, in the right place at the right time. So, you know, every time there's a recurrence or a relapse in cancer when they treat it, so-called, with radiation, there's always a cancerous stem cell. You can look up the term cancerous stem cell on Wikipedia, for God's sake. It's right there, and it'll tell you that, you know, when you have that cancer come back from radiation, it's because you've disrupted a stem cell. You've disrupted its ability to be, you know, what it's supposed to be, and it just starts growing. And that brings you to the, you know, this new thing that they're trying to push, and they're propagandizing and predictive programming us all the time about it, which is lab-grown meat.
Sure, yeah, I remember you did that, you interviewed that woman that was talking about the that nasty, you know.
And so that is, you gotta just think about it, what is a bunch of cells that are growing out of control into something that's cancer? So if you're going to eat lab-grown meat, you're just eating cancer.
Yeah, I remember you shared that documentary. It was like, well, it wasn't even a documentary. It was a short film. It was a short, like, 20-minute film on lab-grown, like, meat and things like that. So.
Oh, yeah, but it was by who else but the guy who did Aliens, right? What's his name?
I was thinking about Aliens earlier when you were talking. The movie, what the heck was his name?
Scott Free.
Ridley Scott. Yeah.
I think it was his son, and he, you know, did it through his production company. And yeah, it was, what was it called? I can't remember. But yeah, it was just high. It was it was done in the new 4K format and real, you know, crystal clear picture, and it had Giovanni Ribisi.
Oh, right. He was the guy. He was the employee, right?
Yeah, he was the one. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, his job was quality control for the big steel bins of lab grown meat.
Right.
So yeah, like I said, the predictive programming is everywhere. I saw it in the show the other day. I can't remember which one, but it's just amazing. Oh, there's a show called Evil.
Oh right, yeah, about the woman.
Sorry. That's a great show, but that wasn't the show. It was actually a show that someone just turned me on to called Utopia.
Okay, it's probably on, like, Prime or something.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, I'll check that out now. I had my doubts about it.
Yeah, I highly recommend Utopia, although it's disturbing.
What isn't these days?
Well, it's violent and it's disturbing, and I mean, if you're at all into, like...
Isn't Cusack in that?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
The Cusack, man.
He's the head of the company that grows lab-grown meat.
Okay. Yeah, and he still has time to get on Twitter and be like, Trump's a bag of garbage. He still has the time. And I replied to a couple of his tweets. I'm like, dude, you honestly think that the left is, you know, is going to be better than, you know, something else? I mean, really? But anyway, he didn't reply. He was filming Utopia.
Notice that what is evil is always it always has a persona. It always puts forward something
right.
Artificial to hide its true intent. Right?
So, Lucifer
and the best way to do that, of course, is the pillar system, where if one pillar gets discovered to be corrupt, then the other corrupt pillar, which is now looked upon as, you know, it's not so corrupt anymore, maybe, or whatever, then that is there to stand up. So evil always wins because we're always either voting for one pillar or the other, but each pillar is designed to support, prop up the other. That's the political system, right? The two-party system.
Sure.
And that's, again, self-evident, right? Obvious.
But your vote counts, and get out there and do it.
Yeah, rock the vote, baby! Rock it!
Rock the vote, y'all.
I'm going to have to say, we're upsetting Noda right now.
Oh, Noda.
Noda is turning in his grave.
Yeah, that was... Clint, who is, by the way, who is not Seth Rogen, who I didn't even, like, in the beginning when I played some of Clint's documentary or his podcast for a few people that I knew, and they were like, you know, he sounds like Seth Rogen, and I'm like, you know what, he was saying such, you know, like, groundbreaking things, I didn't even realize that you had that Rogen-esque type of growl, if you will, and... you know,
well,
so
I promise that I am not the Jew Rogan. Okay? I am not that self-hating Jew. I am not. Sorry.
No worries. I just figured, like, and actually we spoke about in the past When I was visiting you, I said, you know, maybe we should just do a podcast at some point, and then you could, you know, not that you would have to try, you know, just kind of like maybe circle in a little bit more on like tone and different things like that. And I could be like, hey, I'm, you know, here I am. Here's Seth Rogen, and he's going to tell the entire world that, you know, like George Carlin said, everybody's full of shit. And vaccines are dangerous, and the government doesn't care about you. And that's what I said to somebody the other day.
Vaccines are full of shit.
Yeah, they are. I said to somebody the other day, I said, you know how I know that there's something seriously wrong with this whole COVID thing and the lockdown and the keep you safe and we're all in this together? I said, government doesn't care that much about you. Government really doesn't care that much about you. I'm like, do you care about your neighbor up the street when, you know, like, you might not even know who your neighbor is? These people don't care who you are. They don't care what you need. And I said, another way is this one-size-fits-all blanketed approach to this whole thing is collective punishment, and that's done in another area of the world.
These are the ways that we're controlled, and it's amazing to me because, for the most part, I'm an outside observer, right? I try not to participate in any of this cultural shit. Mm-hmm. I don't have my own phone. I don't, you know, I'm really wary of getting addicted to anything like this, right? Mm-hmm. So I look at this and I see these systems of control. One of those is this propaganda that we're all in this together. But mm-hmm. actually, what they're really saying is that we're all in this apart, right? Because the mm-hmm. truth is they're keeping us apart from one another, but they want us to think that somehow equals being together, right? That in itself is brilliant propaganda. Let's take some other propaganda, right? How about we go back to Bill Gates? Bill Gates and that institution, that evil institution, that so-called charity that he has, which, by the way, everybody says, oh, Bill Gates has donated all kinds of money. No, he's donated a bunch of money to himself and companies that basically lick his balls. I mean, that's essentially all that money went to companies that he created or is a part of, right? So it's not, there's no charity going on there, right? It's all a way of giving that vast amount of money to organizations that are designed to do harm, essentially. So, right, yeah. But if you think about the propaganda that the Gates Foundation has put forward with the help of every other organization that supports it, right? Because they're getting their licks in too, those mm-hmm. tasty balls, right? So they're getting money. You got to think about this, right? They have convinced the people of the world that in order to cure one of the number one causes of death in the third world, which is simply diarrhea kills millions and millions of kids every year. Over and over and over. It's like the number one cause of death, right? So what causes diarrhea? Poor sanitation and bad water.
Right.
So we, in our absolute, you know, lust, greed, and complete ignorance
right.
of that fact, have been made to believe that instead of spending a tiny amount of money to improve the water supply, get clean water, and simply put active toilets, right, and places to wash hands and that sort of thing, instead of those very fundamental, basic, simple things that every man on earth deserves under the, you know, anything decent and moral, we've been convinced instead that a vaccine to cure diarrhea is what is needed. Not the clean water and the sanitation that would prevent diarrhea, but a vaccine will actually somehow stop the diarrhea.
Because isn't that guy Offit that works out of or is connected to or maybe works out of the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia? His name is Offit. And wasn't he known for creating some kind of vaccine for diarrhea? I'll look that up.
I don't know, but I mean, just think about that's disturbing. I mean, to me, that's just disturbing because you got to remember we're the first world, they're the third world. Our first world problems are nothing compared to the hunger and starvation and sanitary conditions and all that over there. We are by far kings, you know, and our livelihood, our way of life really because of the money system, depends on a bunch of billions of people being in poverty, basically. That's how this whole system works. It couldn't work any other way. That is capitalism. That is, you know, the system itself. In fact, there's a word, I don't remember the word now, but there's a word that describes the system, and it requires a certain level of poverty so that there can be outrageously wealthy people and the middle class, right? And the problem is the middle class, we don't realize, all of us, that we're part of that pyramid, you know, that pyramid of power where you got the rich, the wealthy hidden in the hand, and then you got the elite, and then you got the corporations, and you got this, and then you got the general population of the first world, right? But then we ignore what's under us. We think we're at the bottom because we're so unconscious of nature at this point and the suffering in the world that we don't realize that below us is absolute poverty, right? Which is billions of people around the world.
Right, yeah.
Then there's subjugation, there's slavery, and then you go down even further. There's animal slavery. There's the whole beast system, you know, growing animals for food in a way that is just atrocious. Yes, or would be atrocious to anybody that actually paid attention. But see, we never look down to see what we're subjugating. We always look up. We don't realize that we're part of that horrible pyramid of power. We have so much power. In fact, we're the most powerful part of that pyramid. Right. If we could just get our heads out of our asses.
Well, we've been demoralized to the point where we don't look at those things. And we just accept that, you know, we're not going to build the iPhones here. So somebody over there is going to build them, and then, you know, they're going to ship them over to us. So yeah, we become, you know, so disconnected from.
We're the worst, most detrimental, harmful part of that pyramid, and we have to understand that. Yeah. We are the cause of all problems, not some asshole who's managing us, not a corporation who we volunteer to work for and do horrible things, not right. Cause we're all volunteering in this. We're all doing this in our own accord. Yes, we might be under some kind of contract. Well, we volunteered for that contract. Remember, devil can't force you to sign a contract. You can use the contract as your excuse to do evil things, but you can never say that you were forced to sign the contract.
Right.
So we are the cause of all good and all bad. From us stems the evil structure that we actually enjoy, a lot of us, the subjugation, right? Isn't that what Huxley said? That for the most part, men can be trained to enjoy their subjugation.
Their slavery. Absolutely. Yeah. Through drugs. So, I mean, it was all predicted. I mean, he knew the Huxley, Brave New World, they knew that these things were in place. George Orwell, who was Eric Blair, was his real name. And boom, he threw it in there in 1984. Weirdly enough, it was in some schools reading. It was something that they had in their curriculum for 1984. And so maybe it was like a sense of like, if they read it, kind of like Payday Monsanto said, he said, they can shoot you with a gun to make you vomit and squeal, but you saw it in a movie, so it can't be for real. So many great songs from his Missiles with Relish release. You can learn, and it's, you know, it was just fascinating. I don't know if I ever shared any of that stuff with you, but you know, he's really great. But you know, through this endeavor with the Karanka virus, I watched for the first time. I actually watched 1984 with, you know. I guess it was the guy who played the Elephant Man, Hurt, I guess his name was. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I watched it, and we're seeing it, kind of play out here. I mean, there's no doubt that this is a major overreaction. Anybody out there, you know, we went out to grab a bite to eat last night. The waitress was there. I dropped a couple of, you know, like feelers out there. Not like Biden, just like fishing for, you know, like whether. People will latch on to something, and then you can tell that they're, you know, that by their reaction or something that they say, like, yeah, I don't know anybody who's sick or who's died from this.
I certainly do. Right. And I want to make that very clear that anybody who says that, again, that's not a scientific conclusion. So I don't know anybody there for. I know so many people now that have been.
Comorbidities and things like that. I mean,
I feel like it's getting closer and closer to me. Right, because so many people I know now That
hey, well, talk to me. Tell me about what you've experienced.
Well, you know, I'll take my friend's. I don't know if we talked about this already, but my friend's brother, who's in Ohio, he came down with it, and the whole fire department that he works for as a paramedic got it at the same time. They closed the whole department down. He's at home calling because he thinks he's going to die because he can't breathe. He takes two steps or tries to make the bed or whatever and completely runs out of breath to where he has to just lay down or sit because if he lays down, he can't breathe, right? And they knew they had it because they lost their sense of taste and smell.
Well, that was me in February. I got that happened to me, fever. Not so much smell, but taste of food. But
guess what causes that?
What does?
HIV AIDS. That is a symptom of AIDS, of one of the progressions of HIV or AIDS, however you look at it.
Okay? All right. But it's not something like, I mean, in the past when I've had the flu and things like that, food just doesn't taste right. I mean.
No, this is a complete loss. Like, you can't, if you hate something, you will not be able to taste it.
Okay.
I mean, he's completely lost his taste of sense and smell. It's one of the reasons, actually, why AIDS patients go into hunger, like they don't eat, because you don't enjoy, you're not going to enjoy food at all. Right. You don't have the desire, I guess. Anyway, again, all the symptoms of COVID, symptoms of HIV/AIDS. Now, there's obviously a debate on HIV and AIDS, whether they are, HIV is the cause of AIDS. I don't really know, to be honest. I don't think it is. However, there is a connection between those two things, and I have a feeling it's considering Fauci was there. It's a gain of function connection, and I don't really know, so I wouldn't be, you know, one to comment on it. There is a great documentary somewhere on the television or online called The Origin of AIDS that I highly recommend people watch because it shows exactly what we were talking about, which is that they were using, in Africa, they set up all these labs hidden in the jungle and were using the chimpanzees instead of apes or instead of monkeys, they were using chimpanzees. And chimpanzees actually can't, if I remember correctly, can't get the HIV infection.
Okay.
And when you, how does it work? You have to watch it.
Is this something that came from, you know, them messing with animals, dealing with animals?
Again, chimpanzees are so, so close to human
structure
that if you use a chimpanzee in any kind of medical and then inject that into the human body, you're going to have that kind of autoimmune response.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, okay, so I don't know if this has a connection. You got the XMRV, the XMRV stuff that Judy Mikovits was talking about, you know, like author of Plague. And then, of course, the one that just came out around the same time as this year, Plague of Corruption, where she spoke about XMRVs, mouse viruses, things like that, that somehow they were saying got infected vaccines. I don't know if they actually said that, but she's saying that it got into a blood supply, it got into...
Well, again, if you watch my first film, the lethal injection film, it shows you how they were making those vaccines. I mean, they literally took monkey kidney tissue, put it in like a long test tube, and then squished it up with a tool, right, minced it up, and then added it to the formula that the vaccine grows on. So... That is the origin of the simian monkey virus,
simian virus 40.
But there's way more than the reason it's called 40 is because there's also one through 39. Whatever. There's a lot of different simian viruses, and simian virus 40 is the one that they find in most cancers of the human. There's a lot of cancers that when you dig into the cancer, you find SV40.
Right, so let me just clarify something here. So when they say that a virus comes from a bat or comes from a monkey or comes from, you know, the rhesus monkey or whatever, basically it didn't evolve, you know, and just transfer. It was human interaction that brought that about, either from grabbing it from them, injecting it into a human, or grabbing it from them, mixing it into, you know, basically the same thing. Sorry. So,
yeah, I mean, like I said, the bird flu cannot go from human to human. And now it can, because they've created an 11. If that escapes, we're all fucking dead.
60%, right?
No, 60%. 60% of the people who get it from the bird, which transfers to some animal and then to a human, because it has to morph. It has to
mutate.
Mutate, yeah. Gain of function means mutation, right? Purposeful mutation. So they purposely mutated it so that it would go from human to human, so they could study it in case it happens in nature. Well, it doesn't happen in nature. It can't happen in nature. It's not going to happen in nature. And you can apply that to most other viral things, because they're not, right? The only reason that we suffer from a lot of these viruses, and from what I've understood, is because they're injected into us. They wouldn't be in us if they weren't injected into us. And that brings us back to COVID, because I actually wonder if COVID is not coming from, because, like, take HIV, right? HIV, you don't get HIV. I don't know, because part of gain of function is making things airborne, right? They made Ebola airborne. They made, you know, they did all these crazy shit. And one of the things, I think that was one of the things they were actually angry about, is because they made H5N1 airborne. But the problem, you know, I'm in unknown territory now. But
you're speculating, but you're not saying anything for fact. You're speculating.
In my opinion, I have to question, and if I was a scientist, or if I was credentialed as a, you know, if I was truly doing science, the first thing I would do would be epidemiological studies, showing, okay, all right, so you had a whole group of people in the same firehouse had to go home and quarantine themselves because they got the disease at the same time. That generally shows that it's not a contagious disease, but that it was somehow, you know, injected or something.
Right. Did the fire company get the flu shot? I guess
you exactly. Could say. That would be the first thing I would look at, is what is the lot number of the vaccine you all just were required to take, or some other thing that you all did in common. I would not just assume, you know,
right? Speculation. But I mean, you know, from what you've done, or the things that, you know, just the things that we've spoken about, you know, injection. And a lot of people saying the Spanish flu, right? Spanish flu.
I guess what I want people to know and understand is if Anthony Fauci comes out and is the head, you know, he's like the head of the freaking mafia, basically. The science medicine mafia. If he comes out and is lying again and confirming and saying, hey, look, the bird flu is now human-to-human transmissible because it happened in Asia or somewhere else, then you know, based on the research I just did, what I put in that documentary, you know now it's a big, fat lie that he admits being in charge of the research, in charge of the funding to make highly pathogenic H5N1, human-to-human transmissible, to make it airborne, to make it, in other words, aerosolized, to make it go between mammal and mammal instead of bird to mammal to human. Okay. They make it human to human. Right? They've done this. So when they tell you that there's a new Ebola thing and it's got these gains of, or this new ability, you know,
it's not natural.
Well, you know it's not natural.
They're saying that it's not natural. No, they're saying that this is natural. They're saying that COVID-19 is a naturally occurring thing. It just happened, and now we're dealing with it. But we know that they're full of shit because it's gain of function.
Because we know that SARS was man-made, because they admit it. And SARS-2, and MERS as well, SARS-2. And by the way, that was actually the research that was banned. The research that was banned was highly pathogenic H5N1 gain of function, SARS and MERS gain of function back in 2012 or
13. Yeah, SARS was 2 or 3. It was 3.
It was gain of function or mutation research done on SARS and MERS that was suspended. That tells you they were doing it.
Mm.
So you have no doubt that SARS-2, which is named after its predecessor, is a man-made virus. Okay, SARS. If SARS was man-made, then SARS-2 is without any doubt, or you know, it obviously has to be man. It's a kind of, it's right. The source is man-made, therefore the offspring of it, or the second round of it, is also man-made. That's the hard... And inversely to that, the reason they... And this is what I find so ironic. They knew that the Spanish flu outbreak in 2009 that we just talked about, the one they dug up and patented, the reason they knew that was the same strain as the 1918 strain, in other words, man-made, because they recreated it in the lab, the reason they knew that that was man-made was because it was the same exact strain. It hadn't mutated. Nothing goes for very long without mutating in nature, right? But they don't mutate in a way that causes them to be human trans, you know, so bat virus remains a bat virus, and a human virus is a human virus. You know, that doesn't happen in nature, at least from what I've seen. Right now, there can be an intermediary mammal or whatever that can do that, but it's just and this is what I think is going to happen. I got to be honest. I think they're going to release bird flu. And they're going to say it's a pandemic, and they're going to say, and they're never going to tell you that they you know, even though you now have this information, right in your finger, you have them admitting that they've recreated it, made it worse, made it airborne, made it human-to-human transmissible, made it more virulent, made it more resistant to drugs, all the things that qualify it as a biological weapon, right? You now have them admitting that openly in a public forum. And when Fauci comes out and says, well, you know, we have this new outbreak, I guarantee you'll be able to go back and see where they, you know, same thing's going to happen. There's going to be all these studies showing that the coronavirus was manipulated in a lab and you know, sold. Right, the same exact scenario is going to happen, but on the television, you're going to have Fauci. Well, gosh, you know, we should do this and do this. This is going to last a long time. He's never going to tell you that he was in charge of making the virus himself.
Right, yeah, sure.
Right, he's going to lie to you, just like he's lying about this. And how have you heard Anthony Fauci in public, by the president's side or without, ever talk about his work in making gain of function? So, you know, funding SARS, MERS, and
said, and I heard this directly in a video where this woman journalist that was in the meeting, in the, you know, the daily meeting, she said point blank that Fauci, the reports that Fauci and the NIH sent $4+ million to Wuhan to continue research that was banned in America. And then Trump was
research,
like,
yeah. It was research that was started before the ban, then the ban came along in the middle of the research, and Fauci, he sent the SARS research over to, and it was SARS, he sent the SARS research over to China, to the Wuhan lab, the Wuhan Biosafety Level 4 lab that is just a couple blocks from what I understand from that so-called seafood market or wet market.
That's right.
That they blamed it on, right? Which is a perfect cover, you know? And so, the way Francis Boyle said is they sold it to China because they couldn't continue the research here. Now, they lifted that ban on research in 2017. Towards the end of the documentary. They have lifted that ban, and now anything goes, man. The NIH is now, and Anthony Fauci is now funding all the same research into SARS, MERS, bird flu, Ebola, Zika, you name it. They are taking those diseases, every disease known to man and every disease probably unknown to man, they're putting it in a lab, they are re-engineering it, adding gains or taking away functions to make it more virulent, more contagious, more resistant to drugs, airborne, or some other form of you know, communication, transportation, and every other biological weapons process that they're adding to it, and they're calling it legitimate, peaceful, you know, research. Basic research is what they're calling it. And because that term is applied to it, it's not being called what it is, which is a biological weapon, which is against the Geneva Conventions and against the U.S. Code, which is the Biological Weapons Act, which was written by Francis Boyle, who has called this what it is, a biological weapon, and he is now banned. No, you know, he wrote the damn code.
Right, he's banned from
no interview. All
right, let's hold right there.
There is only one holistic system of systems.
I will MK Ultra, y'all. Put the MK scope on y'all. If the MK hits you, it's guaranteed to open y'all. The 57 millimeter Mark 110, 200. 20 rounds a minute trying to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary. For the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell uranium to Iran. That's enriched, that's a bitch. Now we gotta teach a lesson.
My name.